So about 2 weeks ago, went hiking up in Stellenbosch, and generally, like, you've got your good hikes, right? The ones that you know that it's a bit uncomfortable right now, but if you persist, you're going to get somewhere pretty, you're going to spend time with friends on a mountaintop. This wasn't one of those. This was actually, like, really shit. It was hot, the grass was burnt on one side of the path, and at some point I called it, and I'm like, guys, this is a shit hike. And I find that threshold of comfortability an interesting concept.
Yeah, so in terms of comfortability, like this room, we're in quite a small one.
Yeah, just like a little box.
I think going forward, we must look for a better office or like something bigger.
Right. The first chair that we pulled in over here was three-legged and propped up against the wall, but some lovely lady came and gave me a proper chair.
Yeah, chairs are important. We need to make sure that we're seated properly. Maybe we should talk about what is a podcast.
Okay. Podcasts are... there's a couple of different podcasts that I like, right? Is that you've got your like John Green-esque podcast where it's really just an essay that he reads. And they have their place. I like them. Then you've got the podcast kind of like what we're doing where we just shoot the shit with one another, have a chat, and listeners would just be like a fly on the wall in that conversation. I think that's like the general podcast format. And then you get those ones that have a lot of aftermarket or a lot of post-production, like your Song Exploder, which breaks down songs. Or one of my favorite ones is Radiolab. And there's a lot of cutting and editing, and they actually craft that story between all the different people having the conversation.
Yeah, for me, I think it's about just having a chat, you know, like finding out about each other, finding out about the world, hopefully dispelling ideas. Like, I know you and I have a lot of ideas, and we probably just bounce it off one another rather than everyone else. So
right.
I hope that as a podcast, we can maybe get some more people to, like, you know, shoot us down, you know?
Yeah, no, I like this. I think a lot of the conversations that you and I have, I would definitely listen to as a podcast.
Exactly. And that's kind of what we want to hope for. Maybe you should tell people where we are. I mean, we're in
The old foundry, which, as far as I can tell, was actually a foundry in Cape Town in South Africa.
Yeah. I wonder what kind, probably like shipbuilding or something.
Yeah, I mean, this was the shoreline, which has now been extended by the foreshore and the V&A and everything. This could very well have been a place that ships were built, certainly.
Ships are definitely not built here. People are more shipping code, I think.
Ah, yeah, no, they definitely are shipping code.
I mean, they're founding stuff, and it's just virtual.
Yeah, I'm very happy with the sort of startup environment in South Africa at the moment. I think that there could be a lot done around less predatory VCs and more investment. But overall, you know, there's the Silicon Cape is the word being tossed around, and I think that's pretty neat.
Yeah, and it brings back to the comfortability thing. Having a nice place to work. People want to work somewhere where they have a sense of place. And I feel like there is that here in South Africa.
Yeah.
In Cape Town, where we are now.
Yeah, so for a bit of context, Jason and I are working on two very different things. He's a solutions architect at AWS, and I'm currently working on my own tech product in the art space, as well as a privacy-centric publishing platform. From my point of view, the whole threshold of comfortability fits really well into product development, in that there are a lot of points where it becomes uncomfortable, right? You have your general uncomfortability of like not necessarily knowing whether it's going to succeed, whether you're actually going to, you know, make bank at the end of the day. But then also just this internal feeling of having someone random on the internet like give you a kudos or just, you know, completely shoot down your ideas. And finding your threshold of, or at least finding my threshold of comfortability over there has been a pretty tough one. Is I think I historically have always tried to please everyone on the internet, and so my threshold of comfortability was very small. And now I have way too many emails in my inbox most of the time, and I'm like, well, sorry, I can't help you, but other people seem to be enjoying this. So I guess my threshold of comfortability has expanded over there.
So that those days, I remember having a coffee with you at the Millen Press. I think it must have been probably a Monday or Tuesday. You had the sense of there was like something about you. I was like, this guy's brimming, and that's when you told me that you'd quit your job.
Yeah, shit. That was quite a big one.
So did you have that? Did you have a change from going from working for a company to working by yourself?
Definitely. So my one side project, which was just a side project at the time, was making enough money to cover rent, and working for a tech startup based in San Francisco was a lot of fun. Worked with incredible people. But I guess the product that I was building wasn't for me, and I did find a lot more joy building my own thing. But my plan at the time was actually to leave my job and find out what it is that I want to do.
Yeah.
Then the pandemic hit, and I was stuck inside.
Yeah.
So, you know, I worked on my projects and ended up like finding that enjoyment through the creation process. But yeah, when it comes to comfortability on that point is, and this is just a problem that I've struggled with throughout my entire life, I was really afraid of disappointing my CTO, because I really like him.
Yeah.
I really liked my colleagues. And I kind of had to like build up the courage to break it off, almost as if this were a romantic relationship.
Yeah.
So my slogan for 2021 is be more disappointing. Not be more disappointing myself, but be more comfortable with disappointing others.
Yeah. And I think that plays into the whole, like, there's a lot of people that say, like, you must get used to saying no. And I guess, like, when you're in a big company, such as when, like, me, you start off, you're like, okay, this is a bit rough. And then you kind of build yourself a niche. You build yourself, like, your sense of comfortability. So you, like, have your teammates, like, you, like, start to build relationships with those teammates, and, like, you become friends. So to take that leap, that is where you have to force yourself to be a little bit uncomfortable, but you kind of get that within bigger companies, but maybe not, you're not thinking about, am I going to be able to make rent at the end of the month?
Mm.
Because again, you still have that blanket.
When you first started working with AWS here in Cape Town, I was actually pretty inspired by the initiatives that you took outside of your actual day-to-day work to, you know, go and try and foster creative communities inside of your workplace, or to, you know, participate in events and actually build up a place that not only you enjoy working, but also the people around you benefit from inside of your organization.
Yeah.
And I remember this was, 3 years ago now, telling me that, like, you're not naturally a public speaker, you're not naturally a event organizer, but you were slowly becoming more comfortable with that process.
Yeah, I'm not a natural podcast host either, and that's kind of also a part of uncomfortability. Like, I mean, we're just awkwardly sitting here talking to each other in a
I'm digging
cubicle. But yeah, like, I think the thing is, like, it's also about growth, right? You want to grow as a person. You want to put yourself in those uncomfortable positions, so that you can learn to make mistakes. You got to put yourself into an awkward situation every now and again, and then you realize, like, once you get up on stage for the first time, like to present a talk on something technical. You know yourself that you know the topic, but you're worried about like how you're going to come across. Like, are you going to engage with the audience? Will you be able to like make the correct gestures to the projector? And then you realize like, hey, I actually talk about this stuff every day in little training sessions. So to make a difference between that and like a few extra people, it's not too bad.
Yeah, that actual context is fairly interesting. Is that as far as I know, a lot of people rate public speaking as their greatest fear. As some stat I read previously was, more people fear public speaking than fear death.
Mm.
And I'm a fairly gregarious person, as you know. I like talking to people and entertaining. But despite that, I did a couple of stints as a lecturer in game design. I was mentoring at a startup incubator up in Accra, and it was still something that I had to become comfortable with, going up in front of a room full of people and trying to share my knowledge. And every time I would have to overcome that imposter syndrome, overcome that fear of messing up. And it's also one of those things where when I would make a mistake, I would then kind of cycle on that, like, oh shit, I made a mistake, and then I'm more anxious, and then I would make another mistake. And it turns out in the end, like, no one really cares.
Yeah.
They're there to hear what you know and, you know, take home what's valuable to them. But the more that I went and I spoke in front of people, the more comfortable I became with it. And just it kind of hammered home that knowledge that, you know, like, if you do fuck up, it's okay. It's really okay. And that only comes through practice.
Yeah. And I guess there's the hedonic cycle, right? Like, you have that, and then you get to a point where you're like, I'm comfortable again, and now you need to reach forward. So what is the next uncomfortable step for you?
The next uncomfortable step for me, that's a really good question. I recently decided to turn my privacy-centric publishing platform called Bearblog, if anyone's interested, into a community-funded project as opposed to a company, right? And this is, some would consider this a stupid move, because by and large, if people don't have to pay for something, they won't pay for something. And trying to amass donations for whether it be software or, you know, saving the planet is a full-time job. But it also requires an earnestness and a vulnerability when saying to people, hey, I've built this thing, you don't have to pay for it, but could you contribute to its development? And as you know, I sent out an email to all of the people on Bear recently saying, hey, listen, here's what my decisions are around this project. I want its monetization to reflect its ethos. Will you contribute? But I actually spent like a full week working on that email and then like revisiting it, tweaking it. And I realized it's because I was deeply uncomfortable with the idea of asking for essentially what are donations.
Yeah.
So that's something that I'm dancing around right now. And, you know, hopefully I'll become a bit more comfortable with it, but hopefully not comfortable enough that I become Wikipedia, where they're like, hey, if everyone gave $1 right now. By the way, definitely contribute to Wikipedia. They keep the world running.
Yeah. I guess for me, I've done this silly thing, and I've moved to the UK, so technically...
Oh yeah, I know about this.
I should be there. And it was to take on a new role as a solutions architect at AWS. So it was like an internal move. It didn't last very long the first time, right? Because I arrived in March of 2020 to like a very empty London. It was fun walking around the city with no people, you know, going to St. Paul's Cathedral, walking along South Bank, no people. it's quite fun for me. Like, I'm not very, I'm a big fan of crowds, and it was good. But then after time, I was doing onboarding online, mostly, you know, video calls most of the day, and it was a little bit tough. And that's why I decided to come visit South Africa, for mostly for Christmas, and then we had another lockdown here, so I got stuck. Very unfortunate, I know, but it's been actually very good in terms of like mental health. Like, I feel like it's been like a relief to get back here, and yeah, just being in the sun, I think, is like great. Being able to go outside, we still have to wear masks outside, which I don't really enjoy, because you know, you like walk down the road and then you feel like exhausted, and you're like, we're like, oh, I'm not really supposed to be wearing something in front of my face the whole time. You realize that. But yeah, like, we went sailing.
Yeah, we did. That was awesome. We like chased a pot of, not chased, that's the wrong word. We sailed around a big pot of southern right whales for 2 days.
Yeah.
And just absolutely beautiful. Just big in the water. Oh, man. That was awesome.
And is that going to be our uncomfortable thing in the future? Because we're going to do that crossing.
We're going to have to do a crossing. We're going to have to do a crossing. We're going to have to get our skippers first.
Yeah, but find one.
Yeah.
Where does one get a skipper?
Right. If anyone's a skipper, contact us.
We have ideas.
So with you moving to a completely new city, I can imagine, first of all, that that's a very, that's a big thing. Like, I struggle with the concept of moving to a new city, especially as an adult, where you're not inside of the same environments to make friends, and to add on top of that the fact that you moved to the city during lockdown, so you literally just like moved into an Airbnb.
It was actually a hostel. It was a hostel in Shoreditch.
Okay.
For the first, like, I think it was 7 days.
Dude, tell me about that. Tell me about that first 7 days.
Yes. Well, the first 2 days I got like on the house from the relocation. So it was in a, like a Holiday Inn, which was a bit sad. So I had my first calls with my manager at the time. Yeah, like it was just a small hotel room. I arrived actually quite early in the morning, and the check-in was quite late, so I think I arrived at like 4 o'clock in the morning, and then I got out of Heathrow and I'm like, right, I'm here now, and I've got to spend some time, because I can, you know, I can't check in until that time. So I left my bags at the Holiday Inn. It was near Liverpool Street, and then I just walked around the city, which I tend to do quite a lot actually, you know, just sucking it in. I'm like realizing, like, hey, I'm actually here, might as well see stuff. Luckily I'd been there before, so I'd been to London, so I knew a little bit about like where the places were, but I didn't have like a firm knowledge of like where was a good place to stay, where was like where was it happening. I didn't really know about the tubes really, you know.
Right.
So like that was the first bit. Then I moved out of the Holiday Inn into this hostel, which was, I decided because of COVID that I'd get a room that was just separate. I didn't really want to be in like a dorm with like seven or 12 people that I didn't know.
Yeah, and I've been to a hostel in London, at least in the before times, the before COVID times, and it's all just like 16 to 18 year olds.
Do you remember what it was called?
It was the generator hostel.
Because I looked at that one to stay, and there was another one. I think it's called the dictionary.
Okay.
The
plus side for the generator is that it's around the corner from where they filmed Black Books, which is arguably the best British comedy I've ever watched.
I think I'm gonna agree with you on the generator part, on the Black Books part. But I mean, like, it's like I was in a normal hostel, right? So it was weird because I had my room, and then you, like, the kitchen was like almost in the basement, which I mean, as it is, UK places are small, right?
Mm.
I wasn't expecting much. and like going down into this basement to go cook your food, and there was like this like mist of oils and stuff.
Yeah, I was wondering how like, the ventilation like, is over
there. I think ventilation. I don't think it had reached that hostel.
That's interesting because I've read things about like when you cook, how much you know particulate matter is in the air and how much carbon dioxide. My friend Simon actually randomly came to me yesterday. He's like, hey, so you know old houses are haunted, and I'm like, okay, go on. He's like, yeah, so it turns out they went and they did a big old study of haunted houses. I'm like, okay, go on. so it turns out ghosts start rocking up in the winter in these haunted houses, and the studies have hypothesized that with all these old haunted houses, you've got your usual stuff that, you know, things squeak and expand and contract and develop issues and rattle in the wind. But the whole seeing ghosts or having, you know, the rooms swell and contract on you and all these other evil ghostly things that happen inside the house comes down to carbon monoxide poisoning. Because they weren't ventilated and people weren't like cracking a window when they were cooking or when they were running their furnace to keep
their pipe.
Yeah, exactly. And so I get that you know in parts of old school London you're like we're just gonna cook downstairs and hopefully the ghosts don't show up.
Yeah, I mean it felt like it. I think most of the people in there were ghosts, to be honest. I think it was also just strange because the people are different. Like I'm used to South Africans. I'm used to like you know the way we behave. And there it's like a bit different. There's a bit more R&B, a bit more rap. but yeah, it was short lived. Well, 7 days that I stayed there. I pretty much did onboarding, which was not tedious work.
And completely virtual.
Completely virtual.
So you moved to London and then just worked completely remotely for the company that you moved to London for.
Exactly. So I was looking on Spare Room, which is like a site to find, you know, somewhere to stay. What I really wanted to do was move into a place with at least three or four other people. Because I find that allows you to meet more people, first of all, and also you can kind of tag on to people in that household to go do stuff.
Yeah, that's actually how we met.
Well, we were doing, our third person was Cheryl, right?
Our third person was the owner of this tiny apartment we lived up in Friedehoek with her two loud dogs.
And again, that is also a point of uncomfortableness or uncomfort.
Oh, yeah.
So that was me saying, hey, I'm going to move to the city. I'd also started a new job where I got hired, and I was like, well, I stayed in Somerset West, and getting from Somerset West to Cape Town, as most people will know, Cape Town is the traffic's terrible. And you shouldn't do it. and if you do it, you should be you should have known. So
yeah,
you know what you're getting into. So I was like, screw that. I'm not going to commute. I'm not going to be one of these people. Even at that time, I realized like I got to live in the city. And so in the same sense, I being like a bit of a procrastinator, left it till the last minute. And so I was like, well, this is available. It doesn't look the greatest. It's quite reasonable considering I haven't really got my first paycheck. So I was like, yeah, this is the one. And then I moved into Cheryl's place.
Yeah. I had recently at pretty much the same time or a couple of months earlier moved down to Cape Town from Johannesburg. So also like my family and friends were all up there and I came down to this new city to start a job as a video game designer. But for a bit of context, these rooms in this apartment were separated by a piece of chipboard. And also the bathrooms were part of the room. And in my particular case, from my meter-wide bed, I could see the toilet, which, as you can imagine, having company was a bit of a weird situations, like, oh, I need to go to the bathroom. Can you please leave the room?
Yeah, I go chat to Cheryl. She's a nice person, and I'm just going to stay in here and use the loo. I remember I also had a bathroom, considering this was like a very small flat. I think both of the rooms that we had were en suites, and I assume Cheryl's room was en suite.
That's actually a fair point. There were three bathrooms in this teensy flat.
in what shouldn't have been. But it was. I remember, like, the shower had, like, a fixed door. And to get in, the door would open inwards. So you basically had to open the door, like 45 degrees. Then you had to slide your body around and then shut the door and then turn the shower on.
So now you need to keep in mind that Rico...
and that is why I was concerned when Rico moved in. Because I was like, how is he going to navigate that door?
For a bit of context, Rico is our giant friend. He's got like size 16 feet, so
yeah,
that might give you an idea of he's a man with a big stature.
Yeah, but I don't think he doesn't mark me as someone who complains a lot.
Nah.
So he probably put up with it. And how long were you there? Like at least 3 months.
2 or 3 months, and then Rico and I got an apartment also in Friedehook. Mm-hmm. That was less weird.
It was less weird. But it's a stepping stone, right?
Yeah.
And it's the same as my hostel, and it's the same. And I'm sure, like, we're going to do a lot of uncomfortable things in the future.
Yeah, absolutely.
And we'll be able to chat about it on this podcast.
So you're leaving back to the UK in essentially 10 days or less.
Yeah, next week Friday.
Next week Friday.
Or Saturday.
So the rest of these podcasts are going to be remote. You know, we're going to do it via Google Meet or Zoom or
we'll figure out
something. But what does your future in London look like? Like, are you going to get back there and find an apartment? Can you go back into the office now?
We can. There's still restrictions, but as far as I know, the pubs are open. And that was the biggest thing, like, the thing that I liked about
it. Yeah, the biggest thing was,
I need the pubs to be open. like, you know, even, like, my previous work, like, a lot of the time after work was spent at Stone Circle. Which was a bar and a brewery.
Mm-hmm.
So you're basically getting it straight from the tap. But the other thing is that what the bar represents is going out and meeting people and going to those social engagements. Like the meetups that I attended here, like what did we have? We had Startup Grind, we had a lot of the DevOps meetups and all of that.
Yeah.
That is what I really enjoyed. And when I arrived in 2020, I couldn't do that kind of stuff. So I felt a bit like locked in, and I guess we were locked into our rooms essentially. But I've seen like my colleagues are starting to they're starting to go out, so they're starting to have meetups in the parks. So that's going to be quite cool. I have met some of my team in person. There was a bit of time around about June, July-ish when it was summer where you could go to the office, and there was a semblance of normality, and I think the pubs were open then too, which is probably what drew in the second wave.
No, that's fair. That's fair.
It turns out like waves of COVID like pubs too.
So speaking of just the comfortability around COVID is I used to spend a lot of time in the rock climbing gym.
Mm.
Less so in recent years, but there was a period of time when I literally used to work from the rock climbing gym like 3 times per week.
Yeah.
And then, you know, answer my emails, go and warm up, then do a couple of tasks and then climb for a bit, et cetera, et cetera. And since the beginning of the pandemic, I have barely stepped foot inside of a rock climbing gym.
Mm.
During the lull between the first and the second wave, I did go to Block 11, which is this little bouldering gym down in Pardon
Island.
Bouldering
gym.
It's nice.
Unfortunate name, but great gym.
Very unfortunate name.
Yeah.
The thing though is that I got there early and I was actually pretty amped to be back in the climbing gym, but as the day progressed, more and more people got off of work and more people started coming to the gym, and it just became completely packed, and I was way out of my comfort zone over there for a couple of reasons. I think the first and most obvious one is, you know, I do not want to get COVID.
Yeah.
It sounds absolutely awful. but also being locked away from the rest of the world for so long kind of creates a newfound like social anxiety, which I'm hoping to shake over the next couple of months as we slowly return to normalcy. So last week I went rock climbing with my sister, and it there were a couple more restrictions in place, so there weren't, you know, it wasn't just mass crowds of people just sweating their way up the walls. And it was nice, you know, we hung out with a couple of her friends, chatted, I met some new people, and did a couple of great routes, and that was good. It was like nature is healing.
Yeah, exactly. And I think for me, it's also gonna be, you give yourself more opportunities to put yourself in uncomfortable positions. My brother's up in Scotland at the moment, so I'm potentially maybe even going directly to Scotland, and then I can maybe quarantine with him because he has a spare room and he keeps mentioning it. But also, like, what I like is that you have, within Europe, you have quite a short distance to completely different cultures. Like South Africa, it's bloody beautiful. Like, it's amazing. So in terms of, you know, there's a pretty high bar when it comes to like something that looks amazing.
It's hard to compete with South Africa.
Yeah. So I went through a forest. I think it's Epping Forest in London, like just outside of London. I'm like, yeah, it's just a forest, you know. And there's quite a few people. You know, like, we've got that. We've got Tekai. We've got everywhere up near Gqeberha. We've got that kind of forest.
I mean, we even have most of Newlands.
And we have most of Newlands.
Most of Newlands, just because we had some crazy fires run through Cape Town.
Like, I mean, we've got it. We've got that left. But I'm like, it's just a forest. And what I found out is that, you know, when it's a nice day, everyone goes out and they all go to the same places. So, if you can imagine like a parking lot, full of cars, like just outside the entrance, and I guess you probably get it at a Cape Point, you know, like people full up and you're walking around, you can see people around you. But it's not the same as like Cedarburg, where we go camping, and then when we're walking from the camp to the waterfalls, you walk and there's no one around you.
Yeah.
And that is like you're kind of alone, and you're like in this huge wilderness. And
yeah, the Cedarburg's a magical place.
It gives you that perspective of like being somewhere different. So in that case, like, I'm gonna obviously try skiing in Switzerland. I'm gonna try, you know, going climbing. I know Scotland has some mountains.
You can go to Fontainebleau in France.
Yeah, exactly. But I'm more interested in the people. I think like I enjoy people watching. I enjoy like going to coffee shops. You know, getting that feeling of what is the city, you know, what is the, and that's partly why I love living in the city so much, is it's like,
yeah,
stuff going on, there's it's kind of, there's a mixing too, so there's some people from the country, most of them are, like, you go to Spain, lots of Spanish people, but there's probably also lots of French people and British people there too.
When it comes to, we mentioned earlier that we're working out of co-working spaces here in Cape Town, since the beginning of the pandemic, you know, I've been working from home, you know, just isolated, and I really miss that buzz of activity, you know, the, like, people doing things.
Yeah.
And I don't know how better to describe it than, like, I kind of feed off of that energy. But also on top of that is everyone has their own form of procrastination. And I try and manage mine as best I can, whether it be like YouTube binges or, you know, just randomly refreshing Hacker News.
YouTube binges is a problem.
Yeah.
I'll be honest.
But one of the nice things about being at a co-working space is that I can better handle that because I am at a space where I am working and where other people are working.
Yeah.
And if I am sitting there, you know, watching blacksmithing videos, which is, you know, a pet thing of mine, just like watching people like blacksmith stuff, it's weird, and I don't like when people walk past my laptop and see me watching blacksmithing videos.
Exactly.
So I will do work when I'm at the co-working space, and then when I'm done, I will, you know, go home or go somewhere and do the other thing over there.
So is that a feeling of like, do you feel like you're getting left out, or like, because that is like spurring you on to, I mean, you're running your own business, so there's an essence of passion in there. But I guess it's also like all these other people are doing stuff. I also want to do stuff, you know, like I want to, you know, catch up. And these guys are, I mean, downstairs they're just opening one of the first that I know of checkout list stores in South Africa. And they are hopefully going to expand. And that's amazing. It's like, I want to be doing cool shit like that, you know, like I want to, you know.
Absolutely.
I want to empower it, you know. I want to like, see people doing that. Maybe not necessarily me, because, you know, like I'm pretty scatterbrained sometimes and I kind of start a lot of things and never like follow through. So I'd probably be more on the supporting side of like, yeah, that's cool.
I really enjoy having my own autonomy, right? I really enjoy working when I'm in a good space to work. I like having the flexibility to, you know, disappear into the mountains for a bit. I do miss working with people. 100% is, if I think about the good relationships that I've crafted, it has been because I've been doing something with people, right? Whether a lot of my friends in Cape Town are from the game design company that I worked at, Sea Monster Entertainment. And it's because we were literally spending, you know, all day together grafting away at a shared goal, or in some cases a shared enemy. And that was super good for me. Then when I started working for Get My Boat, I started working entirely remotely, and I dealt with that by traveling. Right, I would find myself in a new country, doing something new, meeting new people, and when you're traveling, there's a whole bunch of other people like you, especially when you're traveling solo, who are like bidding for that connection, right? Mm-hmm. And so you'll meet people in your hostel who, you know, if it's not a pandemic, who are like keen to go and do a hike or go for a surf or just hang out at a coffee shop and, you know, hear one another's stories.
Yeah.
But now that I'm working for myself and now that I'm not traveling, I need that context where there are other people doing things, because otherwise I will literally sit at home and just become extraordinarily miserable.
Yeah, exactly. And I think like I had that feeling when I finished university and I was kind of figuring out like, what am I gonna do? I had this idea to like do like a gap year, but I'm also like broke, you know. You just finished university, you're basically a student, right?
I mean, it took me a while to actually start earning money.
Exactly. And then you're like, what am I gonna do? But I think one of the like things that I live by is like, just do something, right? Like whatever, like do something. And the first job that I got wasn't like, I mean, it was a job. I went through this agency and I was like, these are my skills, find me some interviews. I did two interviews. One was in Stellenbosch, one was in Cape Town. And I was like, Stellenbosch is closer to Somerset West, so I can maybe commute. Stellenbosch is pretty cool. It was in Techno Park, so I was like, that's pretty
Techno Park is nice.
Yeah, it's a nice place to work. Back then, it wasn't as booming. I think maybe Capitec was there, and maybe a couple other companies. There was one of the defense companies was there too, Reutech. Yeah, so they were doing like helicopters and radar systems, which was quite cool. But yeah, I decided to go to Cape Town. I was like, okay.
Well, I'm glad you did.
I mean, that was a cascading effect. And I mean, even if I did come to Cape Town, I think eventually we would have bumped into each other, because I mean, we have some interests, I think.
Cape Town is a quintessential example of a biggish city that has got a lot of smaller communities inside of it, where those communities tend to I don't want to say everyone knows everyone, but there's a good chance that you will bump into other people, or there will be a lot of common connections.
Yeah.
If you sit down with someone in Cape Town, you will probably know someone that they know.
Exactly. And it makes dating within your circle really hard, because you're going to bump into that person at some point. That's city life, you know. It's one of the things that I want to get back to in the UK. Find those coffee shops, find somewhere new to sit down, meet new people, build up networks. Apparently that's a thing that we need to do.
If we can just spend a quick moment on the concept of networking. So networking is it was in the before times.
Yeah.
A pretty big part of the tech industry, and I'm sure other industries as well, because the fact of the matter is that you are much more likely to hire someone who you have gotten to know in a different context to just them sending you your CV.
Yeah.
Their CV. And especially in an industry where there are a whole bunch of people doing a whole bunch of different things, networking becomes super useful. I think that across the board, tech people are terrible at networking, despite all of these good shared spaces for networking.
Yeah.
And it's a thing I've given a decent amount of thought to from a game design perspective, in that there are many things that you can do to facilitate people having good interactions with each other inside of that event that are fairly simple to implement. Which kind of goes back to what I was saying about when people have a joint goal, it tends to facilitate connection building, or relationship building. And here's an example of not exactly a networking event, but just a way to get people to interact with each other. At the beginning of 2018, I had a garden that I wanted to turn into a rock garden. So
I remember that.
Yeah.
How did it turn out?
So I wanted everyone to bring me a rock for my rock garden. So I hosted a rock and rock party where you had to come dressed up as a rock and roll person. You had to bring me a rock. And there was some rock music playing, and it was, a standard house party, people came and we drank and we socialized.
Yeah.
And but there were a whole bunch of people from a whole bunch of different friend groups. Mine and my two housemates, we have separate friend groups and some shared friends, but I wanted something that facilitated people talking to one another or interacting with each other in a way that was playful and fostered communication.
Yeah.
So what I did is I went and I printed out a whole bunch of little pictures of Sting, the rock and roll star, and I put a piece of press stick on the back of all of them. And whenever someone came in through the door, they would get 10 stings. And there was no real point of the game, but what you would do is you would go and you would stick them on other people, on the backs of their shirts or whatever, and try and do that without them noticing. And by the end of the night, everyone knew one another, and everyone was covered in little stings everywhere. And you thought that you knew how many you had on you, and you would get rid of them, but there were ones you didn't know about, because people are crafty as fuck. And that over there was fun, and people spoke to each other about it, and they interacted playfully. And I think that if we can find ways like that to create more interactive networking events, we should definitely do that.
I think it's maybe just even simpler than that. I find most of the colleagues that I have the closest relationship with at work are ones that I've gone drinking with at one time or another. And it doesn't have to be always drinking. You can probably go climbing. Hey, do you go climbing? Yeah, I climb too.
What's happening here?
Yeah, let's go do that on the weekend. And I think that is what it's about, because I feel, especially now with the online world, everyone puts up this facade of business. I'm businessman, you're a businesswoman or business person, and we do business. And then you talk in this very weird you talk in this very weird way.
Like, I'm a business person. You're a business person. Business.
Should I throw out the word synergy? Should I use that word, or should I say?
Oh, this man just dropped synergy. I'm gonna drop gamification, blockchain.
all of the words. What are the outputs? What are the inputs? Like
KPIs.
What are we measuring correctly? And this is like a weird world because it's not how we normally behave. So taking those people and taking them out, and I guess that's what you do when you do team building activities. It's mm-hmm. like, let's go paintballing, let's shoot each other with a paintball gun.
Right.
Let's go wakeboarding or something, Blue Rock or something. You're basically taking people out of that business context and putting them into being more of themselves, so that you realize that, hey, this is just a person, I'm just a person. We all are just people, and we all just have goals to, you know, have a good life and, you know, do stuff that we like, you know? And that makes the bond at work a little bit better, because you're like, I know this person, rather than just, you know, business person number three.
I hear you. I made an effort when I was working at Get My Boat to at least get to know a couple of my colleagues, just so that they weren't just, you know, names on my screen. And that was super important for me to work together. It was really good. You know, Tanner and I spent a couple of weeks in Morocco traveling together. Lebo and I went and looked at a whole bunch of random wank at antique shops in Woodstock.
Yeah, exactly.
Satati and I, you know, went out and we had a couple of drinks, and all of those is like I got to know the person, not just the other business person or the other developer at the end of the screen, and it made me want to interact with them in better ways.
And then the networking side, I feel like we, like on Friday, we had the Poiki with a bunch of people. And I think it's more about increasing that frequency and being one of those people who just invites people with similar interests. Let's go have a meal together, or let's go eat some sushi, let's go have a drink, let's go, you know, go rock climbing, go out for a hike, maybe depending on, you know, how much time you want to spend with these people. But that's what it's about. I feel like we only we have like one or two of those every now and again, but I don't actively seek those social engagements. And I think that's how the networks should be built. I think that's just for tech people. They need to put themselves into a little bit of an uncomfortable position and try and do that.
Yeah.
But then again, depending on your role, maybe for you as a business owner, it makes more sense, because you're probably going to maybe get some deals out of it. You'll maybe meet new people that will help you with something that you're not strong on.
Or even sometimes, and this is something I have realized, is that I do need that social validation. I know I've spoken about like random people on the internet, but to me it's not a negative thing when I'm doing it with people who I respect in person. Like, so many times I will have an idea and I will just like come and be like, hey Jason, let's have a coffee, I've got an idea, and I'll like lay out this thing in front of you and draw pictures and wave my arms around. And it's partly because I respect your knowledge and your expertise, but it's also that I just want that social validation. Right, I want you to say like, that's neat, you know, let's go do, or say like, hey, you know, this could be better done in a different way, or have you considered this? And that is absolutely necessary for me right now, working in my, you know, by myself, in, you know, my own little bubble, is I need these extra perspectives, because otherwise I'm just talking to my users. And yes, it's important to talk to your users, but also like, users want shit that you can't deliver. Users are
they want it now.
they want it now. Sometimes, like a lot, sometimes they're happy. Sometimes they'll just get an email saying like, "Hey, thanks for this," and you know, a little kissy emoji. But other times it's like, "Hey, shit's broken," like, "Oh, okay, I'll fix it."
But even in a social sense, like just sending a message every now and again, saying, "Hey, thanks for that. That was cool." Like, you know. especially after a social engagement. And I feel like I probably need to do it. We're probably meeting Harlow at some point in this building
yeah.
to talk about cryptos and NFTs. But yeah, maybe just like reaching out after the fact and saying, hey, cool meeting you. Here's my details and yeah, let's hang out sometime. And then that's kind of the first step. And then that's how you build pretty strong relationships and strong networks.
Yeah.
And that thing about like the more you do, the more opportunity you put yourself in line for, you know, like the more people you meet, the more chance you're going to meet someone who's doing something that you're interested in, like, oh, that's so cool, let's like, you know, do some stuff and build something and, you know, have like a really cool project that can maybe help people and, you know, change the world.
Yeah, absolutely. So I'd say we're getting to the point where we don't have that much oxygen left in this
booth.
Yes,
we need to do some logistics. So we got to think about the how long we're going to spend, if it's going to be an hour or 30 minutes.
I think, so...
45?
Yeah, this is my personal preference, is I do like a good 45-minute one, because
yeah.
as soon as I see podcasts that are over an hour long, I tend to not know if I have an hour to listen to it.
Yes.
Whereas I don't know if there's sufficient depth that can be reached in 30 minutes.
Yeah.
So I'd be happy to, you know, we're hitting what, 51 minutes at the moment, and you know, after post, we'll probably have that part down to like 45 minutes, maybe. I mean, or we'll just
we
keep
just,
everything
we
in
just
there.
Throw it in. I mean,
yeah.
it's a discovery. It's like the first one.
Yeah.
But yeah, I agree. 45 minutes is a good time, because if you put it on 1.5, you get it under 30 minutes, then you're
right.
And you can listen to it on your way to work while you're like commuting. So
yeah, and stay tuned for our awesome jingle, which we're definitely
we
going
definitely
to
need
have
a jingle. Then. Yeah, that's another point. I set up that sheet, so we're gonna have the like some ideas, and we can kind of rank them. And then, you know, whichever ones come out on top, maybe if it's like super topical or if it's like we're both interested, we just go whatever's ranked the most, try and keep it real, keep it about South Africa. I'll bring in something about London maybe.
Right.
Yeah. And yeah, I guess my name's Jason.
I'm Herman.
We're podcasters now.
Yeah, we're fucking podcasters. This was good.
Cheers.